It was a lucky hit, as at that distance, most of their shots were bound to go wide. But then, far below us, we saw what I had been dreading most. An airship, climbing up the skies to meet us. A few seconds later, we spotted another, on the port side this time. A couple of the men began firing their muskets down at them, but the gunnery sergeant ordered them to cease fire and wait for the order. I saw the shadow of a cloud moving across the deck, and I remember wondering that such ordinary natural phenomena could still take place while we were engaged in a struggle to the death. The enemy airships, being smaller and lighter than ours, quickly dropped to our altitude, and then the shooting began in earnest. I saw a man fall in front of me, and the ship's doctor ran over to him. They were firing at us from both sides. How could they possibly not hit the balloons? When our small cannons fired, the ship rocked like some kind of fairground ride, rolling almost onto its side, and I found myself clinging to the balustrade beside me, staring down in terror into the abyss. To my horror, my precious brass telescope rolled off my desk and went hurtling across the ship, where it slammed against the inside of the opposite balustrade with the sound of smashing glass. As we rolled back again, I heard the whoosh of our incendiaries being fired. A moment later, a cheer went up from the crew, and when I dared to look up, I saw one of the enemy ships in flames. It took just a few seconds for the whole craft to be engulfed, and then it plummeted to the ground, tumbling over and over in a long, thick tail of black smoke. The crew cheered again, but I saw no cause for jubilation, thinking of the poor wretches on board. Having hit the enemy, the sensible thing to do is to pull out before they get a chance to hit you back. And while the king may have been hot-headed, he was no fool. He ordered the helmsman to bring her about, and we headed back towards Canterbore, with the second airship in pursuit, determined to exact its revenge. The wind was with us, but it aided the enemy just as much, and the lighter Northlander craft was gradually drawing closer. An incendiary landed on the deck and was quickly extinguished by the crew. Another exploded nearby, scattering sparks across our rigging. The king strode over to me. "So, Glockmaker," he boomed, "go and work some magic for us." I had not envisaged having to prime the engines in the middle of a battle, but I could see that it might represent our only chance. The direction of each of the engines was controlled by wires attached to windlasses on the deck. The crew were busy with the sails and the guns, so I gave no orders, but grabbed the windlasses myself and went about winding them one at a time until the lateral engines were all pointing forwards towards the bow. I had to crawl from one windlass to the next, keeping my head down to try to avoid the enemy fire. Then I ran back to the control desk and pushed the levers to turn each of the engines fully on. The propellers began to spin, and a juddering could be felt through the deck. At first it seemed to make no difference, but then, agonizingly slowly, the pursuing airship began to grow smaller and finally fell out of range. The crew gave another cheer, which I felt might be somewhat premature, but then I saw the enemy airship turn back. I had been optimistic in hoping for 15 minutes of engine time. Less than 10 minutes was what we got, but it was enough. By the time the propeller stopped, we were over Canterbore. The king, ever the showman, commanded a signal to be flashed ahead, ordering every bell in the city to be rung in celebration of our victory. With no clockwork power left, we still had to be drawn in by oxcart to our mooring. But it mattered little. The bells of the city were pealing out, and crowds had gathered to welcome us home. The airship was made fast, and one by one we descended the ladder to the round tower. The king was determined to hold a public speech from the base of the tower, and while this was going on, I managed to slip away unnoticed, avoiding the crowds. I went to find my bicycle. However, my legs were shaking so much that I could barely walk, let alone cycle, so I pushed it all the way home. And so ended what later became known as the Battle of the Strait. In the history books, you can read about how, thanks to our superior technology, Freyr defeated a whole armada of airships, while our navy took on a fleet of 50 warships on the waves below. In the Royal Gallery, there is a painting made to commemorate the battle, full of ships, flags, cannon fire and smoke, with Freyr hanging gloriously in the sky above. I saw no ships at all on the water that day, apart from a few fishing boats. But maybe I didn't notice them. Or perhaps it is just that I know little about statesmanship.